Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. The Obamacare exchanges are just as much of a disaster as we thought they would be. And for a number of reasons, that's good. First of all, because it's heading towards a much less quality healthcare system. The fact that folks can't get all the way through to buy this stuff means their private information is being protected, as we've talked about. It's not just happening in a few places. It's happening all over the place. Louisiana Blue Cross says they didn't get a single new enrollee yesterday, and they're the number one insurer by far in the state. Here's a report from, I believe, an NBC affiliate in Nashville, Tennessee, so not some small town, and here's that report.
It's day two of sign-up under the Affordable Care Act, and we're hearing not a single person locally has been successful getting through to the new health insurance exchange. It seems to be a problem, especially in states like Tennessee, where the state opted out and left it up to the federal government to run what is essentially an online shopping site.
And so what you may have heard in there is probably the Democratic argument that because Republicans in different states didn't set up their own exchanges, the feds had to do it, and that's why there are these dastardly glitches, Jim. So it's Republicans the Democrats will try to blame for this, but the fact is this is just a mess.
When state governors said, no, we think this is a bad deal for us, it's going to end up creating more dependent upon state Medicare and state-run health insurance, the federal government and the Obama administration said, well, that's fine. We don't need you. We can do this ourselves. Now, it will probably stun everyone to learn that they were not being completely honest when they said that, and that, in fact, maybe they really weren't ready. While it's worse in the states where the state governments have not decided to set up their own exchanges, it's not like it's a well-run machine in all the other places. Anecdotally, I actually haven't tried this morning, so maybe day three things are hunky-dory. But most folks, and you see this all over Twitter, you see it all over social media, one, they just really can't get on. You know, it puts them on the please wait page, and then they're stuck with the please wait page for a good long time. Maybe they do get into it, and then they usually hit some sort of error screen, or the drop-down menus don't work, or all other kinds of things go wrong. We're going to expect some glitches and say, oh, it's because of enormous popularity. Like I said earlier in the week, the fact that we were totally unprepared for the requirements of the public it's not really that great an excuse. No, it's because it's so popular. Well, all of the numbers that they have released, which is quite limited, are talking about how many web hits they get. They're good for a government website. They're a really down day for, say, the Drudge Report or other sites that are used to handling great deals of traffic. Then the next question is, well, how many people are actually signing on? Because there's really three different measuring sticks that really matter for this. Hits are nice, but you need a lot of hits through porn, Greg. I mean, you can put up a lot of hits of cat pictures, as BuzzFeed reminds us. So getting people to visit the website in and of itself isn't really that high a bar to clear. So the question is, how many can get through the software and look at the options in the exchanges and, then take the choices? How many sign up through the insurance, through all this? And then the next thing is, of the people who sign up, how many are elderly and sick, and how many are young and healthy? Because if you only get a whole bunch of people who are elderly and sick who are going to have really high costs to insure, and the young, healthy people say, the heck with this, I'll pay the fee, I'll pay the tax through Obamacare, then the system's going to collapse. I mean, the whole point the insurance companies kept saying is, look, you can't expect us to take all the expensive people without people who will pay a lot and not require a lot of expenditures in return. The entire concept of Obamacare is to get young people to buy something that they themselves have decided they don't need and that in many cases they're not actually going to need. Lots of people in their early 20s and mid-20s go through life without insurance and they turn out okay. All other things being equal, it's better to have insurance than to not have insurance, but if you can't afford it, it's a bad thing. For two straight days, the administration is very eager to tell, look, the good news is we have, 4.7 million unique visitors in the first 24 hours, but they won't say how many people actually have enrolled. And that's really the important thing. You're always going to get high traffic. You're always going to have the curiosity factor. They've had this big public relations campaign. You kind of wonder, it says so much about the Obama administration. They put so much effort into the PR campaign and so seemingly insufficient effort into making sure the, devices actually work.
On to the government shutdown now for the bad and crazy martinis, starting with the bad. And Jim, regardless of where your party stands as opposed to the opposition on a particular impasse legislatively in Washington, I have to think that most presidents, and until yesterday I probably would have said all presidents, would want to present an image of calm to the American people. As frustrating as this is all going to get worked out. I know it's going to be hard for some people in the near term, but ultimately America's going to be just fine. Well, enter President Obama with CNBC's John Harwood.
Wall Street's been pretty calm about this. The reaction, I would say, generally speaking, has been Washington fighting, Washington posturing, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Is that the right way for them to look at it?
No, I think this time's different. I think they should be concerned. I had a chance to speak to some in the financial industry who came down for their typical trip, and I told them that it is not unusual for Democrats and Republicans to disagree. That's the way the founders designed our government. Democracy's messy. But when you have a situation in which a faction is willing potentially to default on U.S. government obligations, then we are in trouble.
Why aren't we panicking, Jim?
I'm going to give a couple molecules of sympathy to President Obama, because if you've watched the stock market over the last couple of years, I mean, I think, you know, most people would say that since the crash of late 2008, the U.S. economy has been pretty lousy, right? And yet the Dow Jones Industrial Average has reached all-time highs, NASDAQ, all the other, S&P 500. Most of the measuring sticks say things have actually hit all-time highs. There are a lot of days when what happens on Wall Street doesn't necessarily reflect what we think would happen. Tuesday, the government shuts down, and most people would expect the stock market to tumble, right? For this to be, you know, kind of shake investors' confidence, for this to hurt any company that's got a big government contract, and that for everybody else to feel this great jolt of nervousness to go through the markets and investors. Well, that didn't happen, that the stocks actually went up on Tuesday, which is definitely not in keeping with what the Obama administration wanted. They wanted to maximize the pain, maximize the panic, get Republicans to feel they have to reach a deal immediately or else the world was going to end. This is how TARP got passed. This is how most of the agreements end up getting passed. It's, you know, pass this or the world explodes. And it didn't happen. Now, yesterday, the stock market went down about 40 points, though, which is pretty small potatoes when you look at, you know, the grand scheme of things. It's, you know, way less than a 1% drop. So the stock market has been strangely immune to what's going on with the government shutdown. So President Obama really needs the stock market to go down, because one of his arguments has been, look, this brinksmanship is bad for the economy. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Maybe, of course, the real issue is that the stock market isn't a good measuring stick of the overall economy anymore. It's really kind of interesting to see Obama, you know, kind of snapping his fingers saying, Wall Street, that's your cue to panic. OK, I need a couple hundred, you know, to go down. The Dow Jones is down 131 points. It's down about 0.87%. That's not a good day. This is not a panic. I'd say you could characterize this as maybe mild unease.
All right, quickly on to the crazy. And this has obviously gotten a lot of attention over the last almost 24 hours now. This is the exchange between Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and Dana Bash of CNN. Dana Bash says, you talked about the importance of funding cancer treatments, especially at the National Institutes of Health. House Republicans are willing to put forth a spending bill specifically to fund that, making sure kids in experimental treatments get those treatments. Why won't you do that? And here's the exchange that followed.
What right did they have to pick and choose what part of government's going to be funded? It's obvious what's going on here. You talk about reckless and irresponsible. Wow. What this is all about is Obamacare. They are obsessed. I don't know what other word I can use. I don't know what other word I can use. They are obsessed with this Obamacare thing. It's working now, and it'll continue to work, and people will love it even more than they do now by far. So they have no right to pick and choose.
But if you can help one child who has cancer, why wouldn't you do it?
Listen.
Is that Head Start Mama really good?
Why would we want to do that? I have 1,100 people at Nellis Air Force Base that are sitting home. They have a few problems of their own. This is to have someone of your intelligence suggest such a thing. Maybe means you're irresponsible and
calls her reckless and irresponsible. So many things to touch on there, Jim. First of all, that he would insult a reporter for asking a question that Democrats always like to bring up to Republicans in those sorts of situations. There's, of course, the why would we want to do that line. And then also, which hasn't gotten a lot of attention, what right do members of Congress have to decide what gets funded? Isn't that their job?
a really remarkable exchange on many different levels. The first is what right does, you know, does the House have to choose which parts of the government get funded? Well, that is kind of in the Constitution, that funding bills start in the House. Where do they get the right? The Constitution. Now, Harry Reid, you know, it's not surprising that he does not like this little bit of political jujitsu. And then, you know, look, the Democrat approach when the government shutdown is to look at all the really vital stuff, which, by the way, I genuinely think is really vital stuff. I don't think this is silly stuff that is being gussied up as being important. I think the clinical trials going on at NIH are really important and ought to be funded. So let's fund them. And the House Republicans say, all right, there's a funding bill. They passed it today. And the expectation is that they will either never come to the floor of the Senate or that Democrats will reject it. Then that's on you, Harry Reid, right? The argument is, well, why would we pick and choose? Well, they already passed a bill to take care of military salaries. Good for them. They should do this. But the fear is, on the Democratic side, is, well, if you fund all the really popular parts of government, the parts that everyone kind of agrees are necessary and important, well, then the stuff that's left is the stuff that people don't agree are necessary and important, and you lessen the pressure to end the government shutdown as quickly as possible. In other words, Harry Reid will lose leverage. Now, the question from Dana Bash is, as you mentioned, is something they get all the time. If this gun bill could save just one life, why wouldn't you pass it? If this massive new expenditure could save one life, why wouldn't you do it? You know, the question itself is designed to put someone on the spot, and they're designed to either defend their position or to say, as Harry Reid indicated, saving that one life isn't that important to them. Well, Dana Bash asked a question that the folks on the right get pretty darn often, and Harry Reid just flubs it completely. And you're hearing everybody on the left say, oh, it was taken out of context. It's not that Harry Reid doesn't care about kids with cancer. Well, I think Harry Reid cares about kids with cancer in theory, but I think he's decided the 30 kids and the 170 other folks at NIH right now who are hoping to get into a clinical trial, they don't matter to him enough in relation to the leverage he wants to have for the remainder of this government shutdown fight. Harry Reid deserves every bit of grief and aggravation he gets. And by the way, we shouldn't be that surprised that when he gets the question, he makes a really bad answer. And he probably recognizes at that moment he's made a really bad answer. And his first instinct is to lash out at Dana Bash. A couple of folks on Twitter yesterday who were kind of surprised that Dana Bash was asking a tough question. I actually think she's, you know, pretty good. I think she's, you know, pretty tough on both sides. Republicans, at least they get practice with tough questions because they get them every time they stand in front of a microphone. Harry Reid clearly isn't that prepared for it. Although if you look back at the history of Harry Reid, he traditionally makes at least one of these, you know, inane or horrible sounding statements at least once a month, talking about how the tourists smell, or we only lost X number of jobs, so things are really good news, and stuff like that. So Harry Reid is generally a pretty repugnant man, terrible communicator. Why he's a Senate Democrats leader, I don't understand, but I think the closing thought that sums it up best, Greg, is way to go, Nevada. Way to go.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Friday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Have a great day, everyone.